Well, I'm delighted to have my next guest with me in studio who's going to share her story with us. She received difficult news, a news that no expectant mother wants to hear at a routine scan, that her baby might have some issues and that it might affect his future quality of life. But her experience and the life of her son, John, who's now 14, has convinced her that every child deserves one day more. And she's involved with an organisation called One Day More in studio to tell us more about her son and also her experience of being one of the very few people who testified before the Oireachtas Committee on the Eighth Amendment. Liz McDermott, thanks for joining us on Spirit Radio this morning.
Good morning, Wendy. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and about that pregnancy with John.
Well, that pregnancy with John, so long ago but so memorable, was just so significant, life-changing really, I would say. For me, it was jogging along, as I thought, perfectly normally, and everything was fine. I had no reason to, you know, I was a healthy young woman and no reason to have any concerns. So we went to our routine scan, which we had at 24 weeks because I was away at the 20 week, but we were away on a holiday. So we had the scan at 24 weeks. And we went along with our daughter, who was age 2 at the time. And it's those things, I'm sure lots of women listening will recognize this, when time stops and the nurse carrying out the scan starts to take very long and isn't saying anything, and then your heart begins to pound and you're just slightly worried, and then the worry developed and developed, and she said we had to come back the next day because she was seeing shortened limbs and there was something wrong. Definitely we knew there was something wrong, and we had to come back the next day for a detailed scan, which we did, and that was carried out by a consultant obstetrician. And he just said to us, I'm going to not say anything, just going to do a detailed scan and I'll speak to you when I've done everything. So that was kind of 20 minutes or half an hour.
It must have felt like a lifetime. So you just sit lying there,
yeah,
and the consultant says, I'm not going to say anything, and the thoughts racing through your head must have been just so difficult.
Well, I just looked at the wall. I couldn't even look at the scanning machine. I just literally looked at the wall and tried to blank the whole thing out and wait and not kind of predict what was going to be said. And my husband was standing beside me, you know, and there was just silence in that room. So I just remember the first words out of his mouth were, unfortunately, it's a very serious abnormality. The baby's limbs haven't grown. And he said, there are two very shortened arm buds, he described them as, which were very short. And he said, I can't even get a measurement for legs. And he said, I have to tell you that there would be no difficulty if you travel to England.
So was that one of the first things that you heard from the consultant?
Yeah, that was the message. I mean, he wasn't encouraging me to do that, but he was saying, I have to say that to you. Now, as he went through the scan and showed us what was what, and I could see, I was looking at the face of the baby was the thing that really impressed itself on me most. And I remember just thinking, oh, his shape of his eyes are really like my husband Brian's. And so that kind of personalised him. And then to hear, oh, you know, if you want to go to England for termination, that's, you know, that would be fine even at 24 weeks because of the disability. I just said no. It just came out of nowhere. I mean, instinctively I said no. I've just seen we were told it was a little boy, and I said no. You know, just something primal in me kicked in, and I said, well, not that I knew how I was going to cope with any of this, but I said no, that's not going to happen. Whatever way this is going to go, this child is going to have the best chance at life that I can give him. And that was my view. I not necessarily think it was my husband's view at the time. But it just, my instinct, my mother's instinct just kicked in, and I wanted to protect him, and I wanted to do my best for him.
So when that happened, Liz, did a set of supports kind of kick in the hospital, considering that, you know, you were going to continue with this pregnancy, it was going to be difficult. Was there then a kind of care pathway laid out saying, look, this is how we will care for you now, and this is what's going to happen when the baby's born, or what happened next?
No, No care path. I remember they, after giving us the information and we saying, no, we're not going to do termination, there was just silence. And I remember us say asking, is there someone we can talk to? And they all kind of looked around and Omar a bit. And eventually the chaplain was kind of brought down, and we went into a room and we spoke to the chaplain. I have no idea what was said. I was just in a complete other world, really, of trying to just take in. You're in shock. I think everything shuts down. You're in shock. You can't. It was kind of pointless in a sense talking to anyone at that point, because I couldn't hear anything. But, you know, we just had a few words with the chaplain, and then we went home, and it was almost like, well, you know, best of luck then with the rest of your pregnancy. But they did say, well, you'll have to come back in for regular scans, as well as going attending my own consultant. So that basically meant I was doubling up on all the hospital appointments for the rest of the pregnancy. And, you know, at every stage, it was like the hospital made no accommodation for us at all. I remember asking, what's going to happen when he's born? You know, what can I expect at birth and after birth? And we were just told, well, nothing really, nothing special, just a normal birth, because everything else looked okay. We did attend, again, at our behest, we wanted to go and see a geneticist in whom we saw in Crumlin Hospital, and he was extremely nice to us. But he said if there was anything else wrong, as well as the limb development abnormality, that would be really not good news in terms of brain development. So that was a kind of a worry, but it didn't seem like there was anything else wrong, but we just had to wait that one out until birth.
So what was the kind of prognosis that you were given for what John's life would be like, or was anything kind of said in that regard?
Yeah, just at the time of the scan, again, the second thing after, you know, if you want to go to England and have a termination, the comment was, he'll never do anything but lie in a bed. So that was the picture that was painted to me. And it was so frightening. I'd have to say, looking back, it was so inaccurate, because John has a very full and active life. He's well known in our community. He's got friends, he goes to school, and he lives his life very fully. But I did think, you know, that prediction was, as well as being wrong, it was kind of unfair, because it puts the mother in a really hopeless situation. You know, it removes all kind of possible that this might be better than you might think it is. And it's just so definitive, you know. And I was trying to imagine this child who's going to spend his life living in a bed, and how I was going to cope with that, and how it was going to impact our family life.
But that couldn't have been further from the truth or the reality of what John's life is today.
Oh, look, I mean, very soon, I mean, John, when he was born, and like any other newborn, he just lies there and does what he does. He cries, he wanted food, and, you know, you change nappies, and that's what you do on a roll. But I remember I can remember the first time when he was about 4 months old, and he was lying on the floor, and he just rolled over by himself and pulled himself up on his little arms and smiled at me. And that was such a normal developmental thing for a milestone for any baby. Then he started kind of standing up, and then I had a girl helping me out, and when he was about nearly two, he was kind of on the floor, and he just started walking across the floor on his bum. And I remember the two of us, I shouldn't say that word, the two of us just kind of were like, oh God, look,
he found a way.
He's just doing what it just taught me. He wants to do everything that everybody else can in his way, and he'll find a way. And his little brain is working and working and working to figure out, how can I do this the same as everybody else? So there's this massive quest for independence, self-feeding, playing games, computers, you know, trampolining, swimming, all the things that he does.
It's incredible. So, and then the impact, as you mentioned, on the wider community. Everybody knows John in your area, do they?
He does. And they're forever stopping him and stopping me and saying, oh, your son's great. And he cheers me up when I see him flying along the road on the way to school. And, you know, so it's not just about me and him or how I feel. It's also about the impact that John has generally to people who just see him, maybe just that one moment, and maybe they're going to have a really tough day ahead of them, and they look at John and they say, well, you know what, if he can do what he does, I can cope with what I have to cope with.
Liz, what about the argument in people listening to you that say, wow, she is one strong woman, but you know, it was okay for Liz to continue with that pregnancy, but another woman mightn't feel so strong, and it's also okay for her to take that advice or perhaps pressure at times to not continue with the pregnancy?
Yeah, I mean, people say that to me, you were so strong. And actually, somebody in the Oireachtas committee did say that to me, that, oh, well, you maybe that's just your unique gift. You can be strong and accept that. A couple of things I'd say. A, I didn't know at the time I had this strength, and I don't think anybody, there's nothing unique about me or any woman who copes with, and there are many women who cope with raising children who have all kinds of difficulties, and they may not have been detected before birth. You grow into this. You learn skills. Your life takes a different path, but that path is full of discovery and growth. And the strength comes, but you don't experience it as, oh, I'm being very strong here. You're just dealing with whatever life is giving you to deal with. And there are so many positives and unexpected joys that come with that. And so I think that makes me feel even more strongly that women really do need to be supported and, you know, given hope, that hope should not be robbed from them when they're given a poor prognosis at birth. And you know, and you will cope with, we have to cope with life, you know, and things happen at any stage in life. And I think having a baby and knowing in advance that your baby's going to have issues isn't really any different to, you know, your husband getting, you know, being struck down with something like MS or any kind of, that is life changing, but you adjust to it and you adapt. And we have this human instinct to thrive. And I think that's being truly inclusive, but support is really important.
So Liz,